Welcome to the Annie Jennings PR Poker Pro Podcast Series, a poker how-to podcast series featuring the greatest and most accomplished poker players in the industry. Our poker podcast pro today is Sherry Bykofsky, who authored the blockbuster new book Secrets the Pros Won't Tell You About Winning Hold'em Poker, along with Lou Krieger. My name is Annie Jennings, and I am the host of the Poker Pro Podcast Series. Sherry, welcome to the Poker Pro Series.
Hi, Annie. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, we can't wait to get into the secrets. We're so happy that to know you and to have you on our podcast series. We can, to all those listening right now, we can promise you there is lots to come from this wonderful award-winning player. Sherry, you yourself, you've won many tournaments, and we were just talking earlier, prior to the podcast, how much fun you're having playing poker.
I'm in heaven. I live in Atlantic City now, and I would actually love it even if it didn't have poker, but the fact that poker is here, I can go play whenever I want. I'm starting to know the players, which gives me a real advantage, and I'm winning, and I'm loving it, and I can't believe this is my life.
Well, you know, that's wonderful. Your act is an inspiration to many of us who really do love the game, and we dream of one day actually playing it full-time, because that's what you're doing. I know you have your life, though, as an
mm-hmm.
agent still.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Sherry is a book agent, and she actually has a lot of poker pros as clients, correct?
That's true. That's
yeah.
Funny.
So you still have sort of that going for you, but then you've really started to play poker. Is it full-time?
No. I work on my agency, and I author books by day, and then when I feel I've accomplished and been very productive, I go and make money at night and have fun.
Well, we want what you have, but what we're very thankful is that you're going to share a lot of winning secrets with us, so we do appreciate that. I want to say to tell our listeners the name of your book one more time, because it is so excellent. I personally love this book, Secrets the Pros Won't Tell You About Winning Hold'em Poker, with Lou Krieger and Sherry Bykofsky. And who's the publisher on this one?
The publisher is Kensington.
Okay.
The imprint is Lyle Stewart.
All right, very good. So I suggest everyone. I've seen it in the bookstore, so it is there. Otherwise, feel free to order it, everyone.
And Amazon.com.
And Amazon.com, that's right. Make it easy. We don't have to leave the house. We can just stay and play
mm-hmm.
poker. So I have a question for you. What does ESP got to do with it? And yes, I just said ESP. We're talking about extrasensory perception. Sherry, what has that got to do with anything?
When you get to be good at poker, you believe in ESP. You're certain that it exists because you feel like you're divining the other player's hands. What are they playing with? And when there's a showdown, and you know, as if the cards were see-through, that person was bluffing with high, seven high, or they have pocket aces for sure, and you see that you were right over and over, mm-hmm. more and more, you see that you're right, you were right. It's just a euphoric feeling.
Well, that's wonderful, and I think getting that ESP to the point where we really know what the other player is holding, we get a very good read on the other player. That's something that I would like for you to go into as we move through our podcast series, really how to read other players. But we can save that for later, because
yeah.
I know what you're saying. When you really do have a read on other players, it's a great feeling because you know you're playing your A game.
And not just that, that's what you emulate. That's what you're getting to, because the more you know what they're playing with and how they bet, the more hands you will win, the more you'll know which hands to get away from. It's a great feeling to fold pocket aces, knowing that you were totally right, that you saved money, that you, okay, they didn't hold up, but it didn't cost you anything. And you know that you've reached pro level when you can fold those high hands and not get all upset that they didn't hold up against worse
right.
players, against worse hands.
Right.
And
exactly.
then you wait till the hand that will win for you.
That's right, and I appreciate you sharing that with us, you know, because as beginners, some of us will look for those big hands, wait for the big cards, play tight, wait for the big cards we think are gonna be the winning hands for us, but that's not always the case, and an accomplished player really can play almost any two cards, because basically, I've heard, you're not necessarily playing the cards, you're also playing the other players.
Exactly, as long as you don't play every hand.
Right,
play
exactly.
Play almost any two cards in the right situation, the right
yeah.
pot size.
Yeah, it's really great. And, you know, you talk a little bit about how to assess a new game. So let's say you're a new player and you're just joining a game for the first time. What do you recommend as a strategy to getting involved in a first hand?
When you are invited to sit down in a new game, especially in a casino where you may recognize a couple of the players, but maybe you don't know anyone, some people walk in and they'll get their water and they'll get their chips and they won't even pay attention to what's going on until they're all situated with their chips and their button and they're ready to play. But a really good player, while they're walking over to the table, before they even put their coat on the chair, will see who happens to be in this hand that's going on right now. What are the, assuming the game has already been going, which players are in that hand? And then in the next hand, are those same players in the next hand? And what position are they in? You're starting to look at the players who are playing too many hands. Who wins the hand? When you're sitting down, your coat is going on the chair, who's winning that hand? How are they betting? Are they aggressive? Are they just calling? What position are they in? And then when they show their cards, did they really have a queen four on the button? Or did the player who's collecting the pot right now, do they have ace king or aces?
Right.
So much information. So they say don't even play a hand for an hour, but of
really?
Course... Yeah, but of course you want to play some hands. You don't even want to be perceived as the kind of rock who isn't going to play any hands. But it's not bad, actually, to get a tight image right off the bat. But while you're getting your tight image, you are assessing constantly. You're not schmoozing and talking about the weather, and you really want to be paying attention to who's playing too many hands, who's aggressive, who's bluffing, and basically you're looking for the players that you're going to get your chips from, who are playing too many hands, too bad, who's playing bad hands.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you start identifying the players who are really rocks, they are the ones sitting there with a big chip stack and you haven't seen them play a hand. They're just sitting there with their big chips and they're waiting for a hand. Those are the ones you're going to avoid. Once they raise you or re-raise you and you know that they're not betting unless they're winning, that they are very cautious with every penny that goes in the pot, you can fold against those players. Fold those big hands. And
sure, put your chips to work where they'll do the most good for you.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're looking at a new game. Your questions to yourself are, where are you going to sit? If you have a choice, you want to sit to the left of the money, sit to the left of the maniacs, sit to the left of the players who you have a handle on. You know, you've got their number.
Why is that? Because you'll be acting after them, correct?
Yes, you can wait till you have a good hand. Let's define a maniac.
Yes, define a maniac. We've all heard the term, and maybe we are one, or maybe we know a few. Tell us, who is the maniac at the table? What does that mean when they say he's playing the maniac?
The maniac will come to the game as if money has no meaning, and raise with 2-5 and re-raise and cap the pot with any two cards, any seven deuce. They just are in there for the action, for the money. Sometimes they're a player who might play a big game and they're just sitting down to have fun, to get their aggression out and just raise every hand with any two cards.
Right. So it's almost someone with no rhyme or reason. They're capable of just about anything at any time.
Right.
So you would identify them as a maniac. So what are some guidelines to now playing with a maniac or being in a hand with a maniac? Do you want to avoid the hand?
Well, you see, a lot of players are afraid to play with maniacs at the table. They want to be cautious with their money, and there can be more rises and flows. Ebbs and flows with your money when you're at a table with a maniac, but not doesn't have to be that much. And the people who want to avoid the maniacs aren't really... you're better if you relish playing with a maniac. As long as you can't have four maniacs at the game, it's just... impossible, then you're pretty much playing bingo.
Well, but you know what's funny? You're talking about the Maniacs. On the internet online games, you know, they have the free rolls or the very expensive.
The
those are all, they're all nuts in there. They're all maniacs in there.
Right.
Because it really, you don't see the rhyme or reason. You don't see the play according to certain principles. You don't really see a, you know, professional type of unfolding of the game.
But it's still good practice because you have to tighten up. When you know there's a maniac or two at the table and they're to your right, you wait for a big hand, and you know they're raising with probably an inferior hand. So whereas if a tight player raises before you, you're going to fold a good hand. But if a maniac raises before you, you want to re-raise, which will probably make you heads up with that maniac. And you're 90% of the time going to have a better hand. So he will occasionally have a bad hand that beats you. He will occasionally have a better hand that beats you. But most of the time, you will have the better hand and you will grab a big pot. And so you
right.
try to play fewer hands, but
mm-hmm.
play them very aggressively, relish the capped pot that he's going to bring, and wait. Just wait
right.
for those
just
good
sort
hands.
Of wait, right, play fewer hands, play them aggressively.
Something else.
Sure.
Although it's a good device to keep the maniac on your right if you can, I love to have a maniac on my left. I just play differently because I feel there are three ways to win a hand. One is to be aggressive with your good hands. One is to bluff with your hands, which you want to do but very sparingly in the right situation. And one is to trap. And so if the player is on your left, those are the players that you trap. Mike Carowin said that money flows clockwise around the table, and that's generally true, which means if somebody with all the money on your right, you're going to get some of that money.
Hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
when a maniac is on your left, raising with inferior cards, you want his money to flow backwards to you.
Mm-hmm.
So what you do is you may limp with a really good hand, knowing he's definitely going to be raising, and then you re-raise, and then you grab as much money into that pot as you can with your really good hands. And there might be a few more players in the hand that will keep your good hand from holding up, but very often your good hand will hold up, and you'll have more money in the pot for those good hands.
All right.
Let him do your raising for you.
Exactly, so you can conceal your good hands. Yeah, that's a great idea. I love that. So when you've got the maniac on your right, you play fewer
yeah.
hands aggressively
mm-hmm.
and selectively, and with a maniac on your left, you let him raise for you. This
right.
way you can trap. Oh, that's great. I love
yeah.
that.
Yes, and there are other aggressive players,
good
too.
Going.
You can trap players on your left, and you're aggressive against players on your right.
That's
and you don't always have a choice. Sometimes there's only one seat at the table. So you might say, oh, you want to sit to the left of the money. You want to sit to the left of the aggressive players. And you want generally you want the conservative players on your left so that when you raise, they'll fold. You can get them out of the hand.
Right.
But I kind of like to have the conservative players on my right because I know if they raise, I'm definitely not calling without aces or re-raising or anything. They have a good hand. So,
yeah.
But and sometimes you don't have a choice where you sit.
That's right.
So you have to just sort of decide, well, the situation you're in, you have to recognize it. If the maniac's on your left, you're going to be trapping. The aggressive player on your left will be trapping. If the conservative player is on your right, you will be folding more. And just are you going to be aggressive or trapping based on who's sitting where?
That's right, and just to recap, the maniac on your right, you'll be aggressive with fewer hands.
That's
wonderful, wonderful information about how to play at a table with various types of players.
Thank you.
All right, I really like that. You know, you mentioned here in your book, Secrets the Pros Won't Tell You About Winning Hold'em Poker, about developing a theory as soon as possible as you get to the table. So what are some of the theories that you personally develop yourself when you sit down on a new table? What are you looking for? You're looking for certain characteristics, certain betting patterns?
Yes, there are certain types.
Mm-hmm.
And people are predictable. And if you kind of remember the players at the table, they even over the course of a night, They're usually going to keep doing the same things, and their personalities are going to stay true to what they do. That's how you come to understand what the cards are that they're playing.
Mm-hmm.
And so what are some of the things that people will do? Some people will overvalue their cards. They have ace five, they think it's golden, they treat it like it's pocket aces, pocket threes, they'll treat it as if they're pocket aces. You want to know that they do that. Another person has to see every flop. That's the person you're going to get your chips from.
Can I ask you a question about overvaluing? How do you know they overvalue their cards, though? How would you know that?
Well, you have to watch a whole hand.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully it's one that you're not in, unless you're really beating them. But you watch them raise in middle position or under the gun with ace-six. They raise under the gun with ace-six, and then they hit an ace. And they completely ignore the fact that somebody called them pre-flop, and now they bet the ace hits the flop, and they bet their ace-six, and someone raises them, and they'll re-raise them. They just think there's an ace out there. They forget they have a six kicker.
They forget they have a low kicker.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's good to know.
Or
so
they'll
raise
with
file
three
away
and treat it like it's aces.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know someone. You definitely put that person on loose, but you also... There might be someone who isn't always loose. They just think their ace jack is golden, and they can't lose. And that's a good thing to file away, as you put it. Yes.
File away, yeah, because at some point, as you're saying earlier, as you get to know the personalities and the way they play throughout the course of the game, sort of your ESP kicks in a little later.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, a person might be a non-believer. They're the sheriff at the table. They think everyone's bluffing. They're going to call on the river. You definitely don't want to miss a value bet on the river. You think you're winning? Take that bet on the river. Don't worry that they might have a better hand. You're going to win a lot of chips on making your bet on the river. But you can't bluff that person. Don't even try to bluff. Then there are those who... bluff too much. I definitely love those players because I'm going to call him with a 7-8 and hit my 7s and 8s, and he's going to pretend whatever. If there's a pair on the board, he's going to pretend he has 3 of a kind, and if you have ace-king, it's probably a good card.
Now, let me ask you a question, though. How do we know when someone's bluffing too much? How do we know that they hold maybe, you know, they're 3-4 unsuited or whatever, and they're acting as if it's trips or an ace-king? How do we know these people, identify them?
Do you want to ask me that again?
Well, how do we identify the people who bluff too much? Because,
yes,
you know, if we don't call them and see what they're holding and what they actually turn up with in the end, is there any way to identify?
Yeah, two ways. Well, one is because they will turn it. They will have to show their cards sometimes, and you will see. So you'll see that they were bluffing, and then you see they were bluffing again in a minute later because they show a bluff or a bluff that makes it. Like they have a 3-5, they raise the pre-flop with it. Eventually they'll hit 3s and 5s, they'll win a big hand, but wow, that person was bluffing. Also, they seem to have a really good hand very often. And what's really interesting is when you play in a tournament with men and women, which usually ends up being mostly men, you think somebody has a terrific hand, like every hand. There's always a raising and a re-raising, and every hand gets dramatic and exciting. When you play in a women's tournament, you kind of get a feel for the fact that everyone pretty much has bad cards all the time, and occasionally has aces and ace king, that almost everyone is going to be sitting there with queen 4 and queen 7 and 9-3 often, because it's fold. So when you think of the fold as the normal, and what people generally have, and the raising and the re-raising and the aggressiveness as more rare, and then you think of that as the norm in your head, now you sit at a table with someone who is raising very often, every other hand, every third hand, that person is definitely bluffing. That's a bluffer. They cannot have it.
They can't
every
have
third
it.
Hand all night long.
All night long, yes. I know. There's been times when I've had excellent hands in a row, and I'm thinking, oh, pretty soon somebody's going to think I'm bluffing.
It's a terrific thing. You get a rush.
It's like a rush or something.
Yeah, they see cards come in rushes.
Like unbelievable. Yeah. All right, so that's good. I'm glad you share with us how we really identify somebody who's a bluffer without always having to see what their final cards are.
Right.
So it's kind of people who are just about in it, raising with every pot, basically.
Right.
Regardless
even
of where
they're third. If someone, they may think they have a tight image,
mm-hmm.
or they may be, but their actions of raising too often gives them away.
Mm-hmm.
So the more you have a number on the players, their personalities, what they're thinking, you get in their head, the more you get closer and closer to the ESP we were talking about, where it's as if almost everyone's cards are transparent. You know, obviously, if everyone played with their cards face up, and you're the only one who saw, you'd win every hand,
mm-hmm.
or you wouldn't lose. After the flop, you'd fold the cards that were losing. You're almost guaranteed to win. You're still not guaranteed, because there's always a river. But that's what you are aspiring to.
Well, that's wonderful. You also talk about the player who plays too many hands. You try to watch somebody, you know, and their level of activity.
And you can recognize them very early on.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you want to be diligent in sitting down and paying attention. You're not bored. You're folding all your queen fours and your nine threes, but you're not bored.
Mm-hmm.
You're busy.
Now, how would you play against someone who you then identify? First of all, what is playing too many hands from your point of view, and then how would you play against these people?
Well, if you see somebody has no idea what position means, that you see the cards, you're going to get tips from them. That's a bad player.
Mm-hmm.
A player who plays too many hands, that's one of the worst things you could do. And who wants to see every flop, you identify that as someone who you're going to get chips from. Now, the question is, some of them will stay to the river, and some of them are just going to see the flop and see if they hit.
Mm-hmm.
If they
right.
see the flop and hit, and then they bet, you can fold. You know.
Oh, that's interesting.
You don't want to be chasing anybody.
I like what you're saying. So some players stay in there a lot. They want to see the flop. If they hit, they'll bet out. If they don't, they'll fold. That's a very interesting point.
Right. And if they bet, you know they're not bluffing usually.
Right. Usually they're not, and you're willing to let your hand go then if you can't seem to beat what seems to be on the board.
Unless you think they're, let's say you have pocket aces and the flop is 10-7-2 and they bet, they probably have a 10.
Mm-hmm.
So,
give it a go.
Yeah, and also some people are tricky. You know, okay, you raise pre-flop. You have the button. You have ace-king, and you raise. And somebody calls you, or two people call you. And then the flop is 9-9-10, and they both check to you. There's one person at the table. If you bet that ace-king, even though you did not hit the flop, you know you're going to get check-raised. It's a given. You watch the person and how they play, and they're always going to check raise the flop. So you, whatever they want you to do, as Mike Caro again would say, you disappoint them.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't hit the flop with your ace king. The flop is 9-9-10. You can bet if you want to feel it out, if you're willing to get away, if you're willing to handle the check raise. But I prefer. I don't see an ace or a king on the flop. The board is paired. I'm not going to give a person who I know is going to check raise a chance to do it. I'll just check.
Mm-hmm.
So it just depends on if you think you're ahead. But when you know someone's going to do something, you decide if you want them to do it. You don't give them a chance to do what they want to do, and you disappoint them in what they want you to do.
Right. Well, that's wonderful. Well, I want to thank Sherry Bukowski for being with us today. You've given us a wonderful amount of information and lots of good strategy. Next time we see a maniac, we will know what we do, what to do against them, or if we are one.
Right.
I'm not a maniac player, but anybody listening who is, now we're on to you.
It's true. Or you might even want to be a maniac for 10 minutes
tight.
and then tighten up super tight. As long as you're not predictable, you have an advantage over the predictable players.
Yeah, that's an excellent point of view. And why don't we close with that? You may want to just give us a closing statement on predictability and why it's important to mix up your play a little bit.
That is the absolute most important concept. Let other people be predictable, but you mix it up. Make sure no one knows what you have. If they think they know what you have something else.
Oh, I love it. Well, we're going to find out more from Sherry Bukowski in the future podcast to come. Again, Sherry is the author of Secrets the Pros Won't Tell You About Winning Hold'em Poker. She co-wrote the book with Lou Krieger, and of course you can all get that on Amazon.com. It is excellent. And I want to thank Sherry for coming today, and thanks to all for listening to the Poker Pro podcast series, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you so much, Annie.
My pleasure.